got my stuff here. Anyway, good afternoon, and again, I apologize for my tardiness. Commissioner Rebecca Chavez-Hauck, I represent District 23, appointed to represent District 23, and we have the May 1st meeting of the Salt Lake City Human Rights Commission convened here in City Hall in room 335. I'm going to have everyone introduce themselves really quickly as we start, and then we'll move into the next order of business. So, Jason, do you want to go next?
All right. Jason Wessel, Commissioner representing District 1.
Fatima Derry with the Salt Lake City Mayor's Office.
Brad Zeba, GIS Manager with Community Neighborhoods.
Wissam Kudir, Public Member.
Nicole Salazar Hall, Commissioner representing District 5.
Mary Lee Carter, Mayor's Office.
And everyone on Mayor's Office as well.
Thank you, everyone. First order of business is we do have a new member. And Kimberlyn, if you want to take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are. Salt Lake. Thank you for your interest in getting engaged so soon after moving here. That's really heartening. So thank you so much. Do want to acknowledge our public members that are here today. And we do have right now an opportunity for public comment. So want to open the floor to those members of the public who may want to address the commission on any issues of concern or feedback or updates. So Luna, do you want to start? Okay.
No comment.
Okay, super. Feel free at any time to raise your hand, and as the chair for today's meeting, happy to acknowledge and respond, to have the commission respond to any questions or issues that you may see as we are going through the agenda. The next order of our business is to approve the April minutes, the minutes of April the 3rd, which were we conducted our meeting here, and assuming everybody has had an opportunity to review that, want to know if there are any edits or changes to the minutes that we need to make that anyone has seen. Alrighty. If not, I will entertain a motion to adopt the minutes of May the 3rd.
Also move.
Okay, so Nicole, Commissioner Salazar makes the motion to adopt, and Mr. Wessel has seconded it. Alrighty, all those in favor of adopting the minutes of April 3rd, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, those minutes are approved. Last month, I brought folks up to speed on some of the work that I've been doing in the context of my work in the state legislature on bringing about awareness as well as concerns that have been brought to my attention as we move towards participating in Census 2020. And just as a brief overview for the folks that are new here, a number of areas of concern relate mostly to how the Trump administration and Congress are approaching the census going as we move towards 2020. First of all, unless something has changed and I've not been brought up to speed on this, there is not a permanent director of the Census Bureau currently. Shortly after the new administration took over, well, the middle of last year, the former Census Bureau director resigned, and the administration has been in the process of trying to find someone to replace that individual. There was an individual that had been put forth by President Trump, and right before the beginning of the year, he withdrew his name for consideration. So interim directors and others are currently starting to move things forward. Some of the things that were not done in that first year during the administration's first year in office is there was supposed to have been an economic census that was conducted by a certain date. I don't know whether that has been completed yet or not. Others may have background as to whether that's been done or not. And a variety of different tests were supposed to be completed, especially in rural areas of the United States. There were two communities that should have had test runs of implementing of the census, and those tests have not been completed even as of now, as far as I know. Those issues related to administration and operationalization of the census give me concern, because we're 2 years out presently in April, because the beginning of April 2020 is when it is census day. The other thing that gave me concern is that the administration had initially requested that the Bureau implement the census utilizing the same budget that they had set aside in 2010. So same amount of money, more people, more diverse communities, more challenging communities to count. Since that time, the latest budget that was adopted by Congress did include some increases to the Census Bureau's ability to implement the census, but it is still by no means ready for prime time. And, oh, goody. Thank you, Moana. One thing that I did want to share with all of you is this resource. It is called the HTC 2020. And it is the Census Hard to Count map. What you can do is go to this online resource, and with it you can zero in as specifically as you want to a legislative district, a neighborhood, a precinct, and know whether or not that that neighborhood was in 2010 a difficult to count area. And by the nature of it being a difficult to count area, the Bureau and other advocates have concerns that it will be effectively counted as we move into 2020. So that is a resource that you can review. I currently have been asked to serve on the Governor's Complete Count Committee, so I'm trying to be very vigilant in connecting the state stakeholders with a variety of different resources. I feel that our first meeting went really well, but as was delineated by the individual who came from the Census Bureau to speak to the state Complete Count Committee, there are other states that are much farther along in terms of putting their count committee together, starting to tap into neighborhood and community resources to make sure that people feel comfortable and know what they need to do once the census starts. Notably of concern to this commission, and you put that right out there, the citizenship question is very problematic, and some of the federal administration's recent other policy implementation of other things such as the Muslim ban give those of us who want to make sure that we have an accurate 2020 count completed concern as to whether people will trust participating in the census process as we go into 2020. So in light of the charge of the Human Rights Commission for the city, it's something I wanted to bring to our awareness, because to be quite honest, I don't think we can count totally on the administration for being as overt as they would normally have been in the past in assuring that every Utahn, regardless of status, regardless of who they are, regardless of orientation, we want people to feel comfortable and safe that the information that they're sharing with the federal government will be held in confidence, so that they're willing and comfortable with sharing that. And as such, I think that localities such as cities, counties, other jurisdictions are going to have to step up to the plate and find ways to make people feel comfortable with being counted accurately. So in light of that discussion last week, last month, excuse me, we wanted Brad to come and talk a little bit about what the city has done so far in terms of preparing for 2020 census. Help us understand how GIS data is used, how your process moves forward in terms of working with the feds, working with the Census Bureau, working with the state and other stakeholders, what you've done so far, in what way we can be helpful as the commission to you and your work, and then we'll have Fatima talk a little bit about the local update. What is it? Local? I know it has to do with local addresses. What does LUCA stand for?
Census
addresses, yes. Or something.
Because we're just collecting addresses first.
Right.
We're not even giving the census out.
Right. And so that is a precursor. That type of work has to be done in advance of the census. And so I wanted to have Fatima talk a little bit about what is happening there. And then Moana was going to do some work in the meantime after our last conversation about what are other cities doing, what are other municipalities doing to get ahead of this, and see if we can start to adopt some of those, not have to reinvent the wheel. So Brad, I'm going to turn the time over to you.
Sure, thank you. As I said in my introduction, I'm Brad Zaba, the Geographic Information Systems Manager with Community and Neighborhoods in Salt Lake City. Our role in the census right now is very technical. So what we do is we receive data from the United States Census Bureau. They provide us a set of data that they deem as the best available data for address information in Salt Lake City. And what we do is take that data, we review it, and we compare against our records, and we make whatever improvements are necessary, new streets, new addresses, new information related to the census, and we provide that back to the Census Bureau. It's a very strict agreement. It's data provided to us. Only two people on my team are allowed to actually enter data into the system. We are not allowed to improve any of our Salt Lake City data based on census information. We are only allowed to correct what they provide to us, and we send that back to the Census Bureau. We're just beginning the process right now. In terms of preparing other aspects of the census effort, the mayor's office with Aaron Summers has been coordinating with Salt Lake County on some canvassing efforts to assist with data collection and updates for primarily these hard-to-count areas. So they'll be focusing on those areas. I think they have a group of about 25 volunteers right now that will go out and assist the effort. The county has purchased a software application that is approved by the Census Bureau that these volunteers will use to update data, and that data will be provided to me, and we will use that information to update the Census Bureau's data that we have. We're supposed to be complete with our review of the data. I believe it's the 1st of July is our target for that. So along with addressing, we also do any boundary changes or any issues we might have with census tracts. Census tracts are the primary grouping or area that defines census collection efforts.
Great. Do we have any questions for Brad? Do you feel that you're on target for being able to meet the July 1st deadline, Brad? And are there neighborhoods or communities that you feel that you might need more assistance with in terms of evaluating current boundaries, or is that stuff that you pretty much pick up from a county record, city recorder office information?
Well, Salt Lake City manages its our own address information,
okay.
So we pretty much have what we need. It's going to be challenged. This is an expanded effort this time. In the past, it's been mostly a manual process where they provided maps to us, and really it was just hand-drawn updates to those maps, and we sent them back to the Census Bureau. They've added some additional information to collect this year, which they really want to get unit information in apartment buildings and condominiums and things like that, multifamily buildings, because they feel like that's one of the biggest areas they've been undercounted is these areas where there's apartment units. And that's challenging. That's a challenging piece of information to collect. As you've probably seen in Salt Lake City, there's a lot of new apartment complexes going up. And so we are going through our data right now on trying to identify where these changes have occurred, and then we can certainly overlay that information in our database and our software tools with these undercounted census information provided to us. So I think we should have, I don't see any challenges necessarily to missing the deadline. It's going to be, we're on it. We have to move pretty quickly, and I'm counting on these volunteers to assist us with the effort. So coordinating with Aaron Summers on that, that's going to be key. I'd be happy to report back to Moana or this committee if we do find areas that we can use some assistance.
Please do, yes. If you see areas of concern, or you feel that we need to be made aware of a challenge that you're running into, please let Moana know so that she can share that with us, so we can either assist individually, or if we have resources that might be to which we have access that could be of assistance, then we can know to help. So, but appreciate the work that your team is doing.
Well, thank you. Sounds good.
All righty.
Okay, thank you. So just to kind of give you guys update, Brad has already sort of given you guys the overview of LUCA kickoff event. We are working with the Salt Lake City New Americans Office, as well as the Mayor's Office, have been planning and putting together all the canvassing. We are planning to have 80 volunteers and to conduct the canvassing in two Saturdays. We want to put together three trainings, one to happen in West Valley at the West Valley Multicultural Center, one at the Sorensen Center, and one at the Columbus Center as well. Those dates will be...
What was the third one?
Columbus Center. Yes.
And we can send these out as
yes,
well.
We will. We will send these dates out to you guys and availability. The ask that's coming to the HRC members is we're in need of a few of you guys participating in the kickoff training on May 14th at the county building from 9 to noon. I also have details here as well that I'll be passing around for you guys. But we do need help to recruit the volunteers for the canvassing. As Brad mentioned, we have 25 volunteers currently in standing, but we need the 80 volunteers.
Alrighty, that's a lot. That's a big crew to get to put together.
And I'm not available that day, sorry. Yeah. I have an evidentiary hearing.
So if the commissioners can just individually let Fatima or Moana know if you are able to make that training. Is it fine if we can make it for a portion of that? Is there a time that you would prefer, just like at the beginning? Or if it's a 9 to noon, maybe not everybody can accommodate that span of time. Okay. Alrighty. That sounds good. Yeah, so if the 14th doesn't work, look at the other dates. It would be great if we could share the time, if one of us can do one and then the others, maybe also the other dates. Thank you. This is great. And then also, if you... No, are we able to use, how old does a person need to be to volunteer, is I guess what I'm getting at. Because I know that a lot of students are often looking for service hours for their community service grades. So, but are we limited to people that are 18 and over, or can we use younger folks?
We did talk about getting younger votes and getting a lot of students involved. Okay. So I don't think there is, it has to be a matter of just availability, okay. And also transportation has to be accounted if we're using kids under 18.
Okay.
I know the county and our office is planning to somehow get vans to, transport water and get people around.
Okay.
So that could be, if you have a few students that you want to recommend, we'd love that.
Okay.
I think it's a great idea.
Super. Okay. Yeah. Any other feedback or ideas? Sometimes youth groups, whether it's church or other affiliated youth groups are looking for projects, and it might be something that might be a resource that we could use, other community outreach groups. Super. Thank you. And thanks for putting that together. Yes,
perhaps
Jason.
Perhaps announcements at community council meetings.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I don't remember who has replaced you at on the west side ones, but
we'll have Elaine, and we can send that out with Nate's team.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great.
If you get it on the agenda rather than just the person-to-person or community access thing, if it gets on the agenda and you give a brief, have the point person give a brief presentation on it, you might get more buy-in.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. We'll let Nate and our team know about that.
Yeah.
And we've got some tomorrow, so even if you could give them the letter or a little, or even just a little flyer, I know that's really quick turnaround time, but sometimes it's just nice. And I know the ones that I'm at tomorrow, if Nate wants to pitch them, I'm more than happy to give people a quick background on why it's so important to get volunteers to help.
Especially for those 10 that are the leaders of the group, they're going to need to come every single Saturday, right?
Yeah.
And then other people can just, maybe it's only one Saturday that you can participate, so volunteering that one Saturday.
Okay, that sounds good. Alrighty, thank you. Great, great work. Okay, Moana, what are you finding out about what other communities are doing?
So while I was researching about this, a lot of people are doing similar to what we're doing with the Luke account, first trying to find out what address is. And we're mostly focusing on the areas, like Brad and Fatima said, that were undercounted in the last census. Okay. And then that's where we're doubling up our efforts to figure out who's in those areas we need to go out to. So I thought it gave me a little bit of hope that Salt Lake City is on par with that. The hard part for the whole state of Utah is a lot of the rural areas as well. So part of what's happening with us too is our office has had the training with the Complete Count Committee. The liaison from the Census Bureau came and trained us, was it 3 weeks ago, I believe? So Salt Lake City.
Is that Sergio?
Yes,
good.
Sergio.
Okay.
So our Salt Lake City as a whole, we're all on board and the mayor is pushing it so that we can make sure all communities are represented. And I think that was one of the main efforts, that it was coming from the top down. And then there was a main focus. So Minnesota, New York City, they're all doing very similar work right now. Also, New York City is holding a summit with various cities, and we're hoping to send Fatima so she can see what best practices are happening there and to send her back. And that's happening at the end of the month in Boston.
Wonderful.
It's their immigration office out of New York City. So they're convening, I think there's like 50 different cities that are a part of this coalition. So if we can get, like, this is just my preliminary search, looking online and figuring out and looking at other data. But I think even just going out there and seeing what other municipalities are doing too, because so many people are worried about it, not just us. And that's what was the feeling that I got when I started looking it up. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm overwhelmed. There's so many different places that are like, nobody's counting anybody. You have to do this on your own. So yeah, I can provide some of the links. And I think that another very important conversation that can happen here is how we approach communities of color or marginalized communities, especially with the question that they're adding. And I don't know, Fatima and I were talking about this, how I can't wholeheartedly invite all of these people to say, you must mark immigrant, are you a citizen of this country or not? And so the education piece as well, when we're getting their addresses, when we do, we're introducing the whole idea of what the census is. I think that that's a good thing to talk about here. If I know that some of you mentioned that you in protest you didn't answer certain questions, and I guess if enough people don't answer that question, then they'll have to count every single one of those. But yeah, those are some of the in researching different cities, those were the types of sensitivities that people were thinking about.
And I'm thinking possibly at the summit they may talk about it. And I'd be intrigued as to if there are discussions there at the summit and if there is a consensus from community organizing groups that say this is the way we're going to handle it, and then we could probably follow suit. But I'd be really intrigued as to how different communities are going to navigate it. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Salazar, did you have a question?
Well, I'm just kind of curious. I'm I don't know how helpful it would be or not, but because this is a city kind of commission, but I'm on the board of a nonprofit that works with a lot of migrant communities. They fund Head Start programs all over rural Utah for the migrant children. And I'm not sure if some of our ideas could be passed on to them and to what extent they would want to be involved, because I know counting those populations is critical for their funding, mm-hmm. of course. You know, the more kids that are out there, more families, the more funding they get, and that helps.
So are you speaking of Centro La Familia? Yeah. So I actually had the opportunity to keynote their kickoff for their pre-service training, and I brought up this issue, and I said, you know, we're going to be depending on you in the community and those of you that are working at the centers that are working with our families, and Gonzalo knows, their CEO knows that we're interested in finding ways to connect with the families.
Is he on board with that?
I just mentioned it and I didn't get a chance to follow up, but I'd be surprised if he's not. But if you could also
supportive.
Work on it from your end with the board. But that is kind of what we were doing with the state complete count committee, is identifying community groups that are already working with potential populations that could be undercounted, and making sure that we're bringing them into the dialogue as to what the outreach campaigns need to look like, what education campaigns need to look like, and how they can help us bridge those communities. But I don't see a need of totally depending on those state-oriented organizations if we also know ones that might be more specific to the city. I think there's going to be overlap because in many cases, these statewide organizations have a touch point with the city and the county and other communities. But if there are some that may be city specific, this could be faith communities. That's one of the other areas that we're looking to, is reaching out to the various faith communities, and asking them to help us connect, and to make sure that they're helping us drive what the communication looks like going outward to their populations and to their stakeholders, so that we can be sensitive to the way that information will be received, regardless of what that all looks like. So please, as we move forward in identifying what the city's role is going to be and how the commission can help articulate that and drive that forward, please, please weigh in with your ideas. And if we're missing something, please, you know, that's part of, we've got to kind of operate in the space of being the city's gap analysis as we, whether it's this issue or other issues, if you see that we're missing the mark on something with a population, you know, this is the space, this is the place where we can be candid with each other and be clear with each other that something needs to be articulated a different way. So please. Thank you, Nicole.
I forgot to mention that Jen, she was going to pop in, but she's at the council. She said that in our proposed budget, they proposed about $15,000 to try to support in outreach efforts.
Perfect.
So that's where we're at in terms of Salt Lake City. And then, of course, our office is directly helping with the complete count.
So do you know of any, I was talking to Karen Hale with Salt Lake County, and she mentioned that they're doing something with the chamber also on the May 4th. Actually, I think it's on May 14th.
Yes.
It's in conjunction. So we're doing the training in the morning and the kickoff for the canvassing.
Right.
And then there's going to be this after, is it at noon or afternoon? With CODA. Okay. And with the chamber.
Yep.
Okay. Because we're trying to get the business community and the chamber mm-hmm. to understand and realize how economic data is part of all of this, and that we all need to kind of work together to make sure this is done effectively. So it occurred to me that it was the same day, and so I didn't know whether this was a full day of census-oriented stuff. Great. Are there any other questions or comments? Feedback? Okay. So one of the things we wanted to talk about is going forward, how to prioritize issues of concern or topics that we should probably have at the forefront for the commission. And actually some of the ones that I'm seeing as our updates are our issues, our priority issues. But I wanted just to kind of open this up for other ideas and topics.
And the other topic we discussed was we're going to have a rotating board. Oh, and I mean, a rotating chair. Not rotating board. and if that seems like, since this is the major thing for you, then we had that as a focus point. And then whoever's chairing it, it would seem a little bit, it would go along with organization. And if during the summer you wanted to take one of the months off, okay. Many of the boards and commissions take July off because people are out of town, and then we end up with two people and me. So that could be something in planning for 2018. Right. So,
and we had talked about the rotating chair. You know, we went back and forth as to whether or not we wanted to nominate, but we also still, do we have any more vacancies left?
So
we still have three.
Wissam is just waiting for the council.
Oh, okay, great. Okay.
The mayor has Luna's. So then,
okay.
And then there's a couple more that okay. we have in the pipeline as well. So I'm hoping that we have a full board by the summer.
Okay.
I'm praying, because it takes a while for these two parts to happen.
And that was one of the reasons we had discussed last meeting of doing this rotating chair bit until we have a complete commission appointed and approved, because then we have everybody's talent around the table. And if, I mean, we may be missing somebody who may be really interested in being chair. So we didn't want to jump ahead of the game necessarily, and felt that in a way it also gives all of us a chance to feel out whether that's something we may want to do, how we might want to serve, by test driving every month, getting rotating the chair. And or if we do it for the next few months, even after we bring on the new commissioners, we might think that this feels very inclusive and not hierarchical and maybe fits who we are to do a rotating chair. So, you know, I think we're all game for evaluating that. And would we need to change anything in the policies or procedures that guide this commission if we were to decide that we wanted just to make it a permanent thing?
With the rotating
chair?
Oh, it's all up to you.
It's just how we decide we want to do by tradition and practice.
By vote, yeah, okay. Whatever you...
Okay, well,
it's flexible.
Yeah, I say we just continue to do it until somebody really is chomping at the bit that want to be chair. Because that was part of the discussion last meeting, too, as we did have kind of throw it out there, and nobody seemed to be like, I want to do this. Oh. So...
Anyway, having a rotating chair will keep people more actively involved, too.
I think so.
Because they have to plan ahead for the next meeting.
Yep.
So I think it'll be more egalitarian, and it'll keep us more active.
Okay, super. Great. Great feedback. So topics, other than the ones that you see that are listed in the status updates, wanted to see if there are issues. I know one that Luna had brought up last month was one related to school resource officers and what is happening with their training relations with the school district. And I don't know if anybody has an update on that or not from the staff.
So I talked with Angela, not Romero, Doan. Angela Doan, and whoever wants to take that on in the summer, because their meetings fall on this same evening, board meetings.
Okay.
The Salt Lake City School Board meetings, but she can come and we can schedule a day for her and Sandra to come.
Okay.
Representative Hollins.
Representative Hollins, that would be great.
Been working together.
Great, because that was, and I had asked that we invite Representative Hollins, who also happens to work for the city by profession, because some of the legislation she's worked on over the last couple of years relates to the school to prison pipeline. And trying to bring awareness at the legislative level of the concerns with that issue. And one of the bills that she ran a couple of years ago was to call to account how school districts intersect with the support from the police department for school resource officers, how they're utilized, how they're trained. And then on the other side of it, how the school district is... how the administration, how teachers see the role of school resource officers and trying to reboot, for a better way of putting it, how those school resource officers are utilized by teachers, because a lot of times what we're finding is teachers are defaulting to highest use of force automatically because they may be overwhelmed with the size of the classroom. They don't have the skill set of how to deal with de-escalation of conflicts between students. So Representative Hollins, Sandra, has been working on this issue, and so I'm glad that that's continued. I think there's like a working group that's part of that too. So we thought we would have them come give a report to the commission and talk to us about what they're doing. And again, how can we help them carry forward any strategies or things that they may be working on? So
I think the legislation is helpful to the changes to the JJS code. Okay. I think those were particularly helpful in I don't want to say forcing teachers to deal with problem children, but really forcing the schools to address those problems and not just default to a school resource officer to handle a difficult child, actually implement trainings to teachers on how to work with them. So I don't want to blame teachers. I think they're in it for the right reasons, and really I think it's more at fault with the district and each school and not implementing trainings for those teachers to learn
how to utilize them.
Yeah. And how to effectively utilize a school resource officer. So I think that was one of the first steps, is getting that legislation in place that makes it so that they're not necessarily a default for schools anymore.
Okay. Perhaps when Angela comes to present, since she's with the district, if she could also do an update as to what might be happening in that regard. Mm-hmm. Can we have her do that also?
Yeah. And she's been working with the school resource officers, and part of her proposal was to try to increase transparency from Salt Lake City's side, knowing who these officers are, making that available, and what your rights are as a student. Mm. So she can come and elaborate on all that she's been working on, and just making that public, and because it's really difficult to find out who's the school resource officer for your student. Well, you don't really know unless you have encountered them in maybe a negative way. So improving those relations as well. I'll ask her to come, and if there's a certain month in the summer, they take a break. So August or September, maybe.
So Commissioner Dumbia, I do you have... Because the diversity training, the inclusion training is broader than this, you know, it dovetails with the intersectionality related to education and our kids. But obviously what we're trying to do is make sure that the city in its entirety, all staff, everybody that's associated with the city is being responsive, is being culturally responsive to our diverse populations. So what other ideas do you have, or what would you like the commission, how would you like us to move forward perhaps with some of these? Should look like, mm-hmm. or should involve other Super. One thing that I'll bring to the table going forward when it's ready is I currently serve on the Governor's Multicultural Commission. And over the last 2 years, we've been working on a toolkit that for all of the different state agencies. It's something toolkit. It's not a diversity toolkit. It's called something else completely. But we have, as commissioners, have all kind of put in our 2 cents worth about what components we would like to see that are part of it. It is really close to being ready. It is not quite. I was hoping that we'd have it done today because I kind of wanted to hand it out to all of you so that you could take a look at it and see what you think about it. But I'm sure if we were to explore this issue at a future meeting, especially if moving into the fall or later on in the summer, they'll have that ready and I can share it with you all and you can take a look at it again to see what's missing and what's there. There's some pieces of it that I think could have been a bit more bold that weren't. I weighed in. It wasn't put in, but that's okay. It's a consensus document. But I think it's a really good first step. And what they're going to do with it is once it's ready, the Department of Workforce Services is going to pilot it. They're going to try the training program, there's like a pledge form that the agency has to agree to commit to doing a variety of different things. Each employee, as they are onboarded with the agency, has to be a part of that training. There's an online training component to it. I would like to see more beyond that, more interactive working groups where people can kind of explore how they do their work and is it inclusive, is it responsive? But it's a start. And so I want to share that with all of you once it's ready so we can see if we want to pick up bits and pieces from it. It's always get great, again, if we don't have to reinvent the wheel. And the Office of Multicultural Affairs for the Governor has been working on this with the various state agencies for the past couple of years. So once that's ready, I'll, you know, roll that out and we can use that maybe as a starting point and then evaluate. And if maybe if you want to take the lead in helping us walk through that, too, that'd be great.
It's fantastic.
Wonderful. Yes, please.
Oh, yeah.
Please, Luna. Anybody, anytime, just let us know.
Details on that. When you ask Angela, you said, mm-hmm. Okay. If we can get kind of what exactly is part of that package, maybe the toolkit that we have, there might be a way to merge both of these. And I know the police department also has the internal.
They do the implicit bias,
right.
And a couple of other trainings that we can bring. I'll find out what specifically they are.
And then the charter schools, they have their own program that I know as a board member, one has to go and take 2 hours of training. Everybody, once again, I think if that information can be sent to you, that would help.
Okay.
And I would also volunteer to help Shauna in doing this. I'm very interested.
Fantastic. Has the commission ever most recently had the HR department come in and kind of walk through how we do training here?
In November, we had Julio here.
Oh, okay. So fairly recently.
But we had a whole different makeup of people, so
That might be a good starting point, because to
I
address...
think it was only Jason that was at that.
Oh, okay. Hey, Jason.
Oh, yeah, you were there at the end, yeah.
Jason.
That was your first one.
And it was the starting point where Martin was going to take point on trying to...
Yeah.
Take a lead on getting to the bottom of diversity issues at the city, and he resigned, was it a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, so we're back to square one. But it would be good to have a point person on the commission take a lead on that, and it was supposed to be liaising with the HR department here to see what we need to know and what needs to be done and all of that. So.
And I've been working on that on an ADA level as well as a diverse level, just because, especially for our first responders, having them understand, like, with accessibility issues and a lot of people that you can't, the invisible disabilities where some people are being arrested and maybe have schizophrenia and they're just thinking that they're erratic behavior and then they take them in and have no idea. So that's what I've been working on that piece with HR. And we're trying to implement that across the board. But of course, it's going to take some time. And I do like the model. We were talking about this internally with our office about having one department first do it because there are 3,000 employees in Salt Lake City. And then starting with fire and police because they're the ones that are interfacing in a way that is the most urgent to be trained in these ways.
I agree, and I would say that ADA is definitely part of, that's in my mind, that is part of diversity. It's any flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And perhaps also, Commissioner, one thing that you also brought up that resonated with me is the idea of doing a gap analysis or evaluating where the holes are. What are we doing right? What's missing? I don't know quite best how we might want to approach that, but it seems like that's an obvious starting point. So we're not
right.
going after something that, or if they're doing something effectively, then we look for where the improvements need to be made. So,
and this is the project manager me coming out again in doing so, understanding the gaps and understanding again what's actionable as opposed to, I mean it's fantastic to make recommendations, but if they end up only being recommendations, then.
And Julio has the gap analysis, so we can bring him in or one of his.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, he has one that was for the last couple of years. They did on race and gender.
Oh, great.
And that's where the gender equity pay, when we passed that here, that's where it came out of that data. Oh,
and race and gender is, in my mind, it's a significant piece, but it is a piece of the entire. And I realize diversity is a very huge.
It's huge, yeah. Yeah, so those two things, and that, of course, can be one of the things that we bring up, is that it's only those two that are being analyzed.
Okay, yeah. Wonderful. So, Commissioner, are you willing to continue to kind of take this as your kind of your piece to keep
absolutely,
us going?
Absolutely, and
anybody else who wants to join on?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, wonderful. Super. Thank you. All righty. So any other topics other than maybe moving to the status update?
Not quite a topic, but perhaps a theme that we should consider. Now going on almost 2 years ago, I met with a couple of members of the city council, since this board is supposed to be in advisory capacity to the mayor's office and to the city council, about trying to increase our involvement with them and their involvement with us, and they were pretty open to the idea. I attended a few city council meetings just to kind of be on the same page, and they very specifically were pushing, thinking big topic for the future was going to be affordable housing, but that kind of went by the wayside, and I don't think we've seen anybody from the city council at one of our meetings or gotten any word from them in the last almost 2 years. So
okay.
If we can reorient and try to reach out to the city council again, that might have us be working on multiple tracks instead of just the mayor's office.
Okay.
Do you know by chance who on that commission, because I have been diving into affordable housing, that's one of my...
It was a topic I think everybody on the city council was very concerned with, since it's a perennial election issue.
I'll reach out.
At the time, I spoke with James Rogers and Stan Penfold, who is no longer involved. So James Rogers definitely was interested in it.
Okay.
I believe Aaron Mendenhall also had a lot of concerns about affordable housing and...
Okay.
I'm wondering, Council Member Wharton was part of this commission, so he might be the best liaison.
That's who I was thinking.
I did reach out to Council Member Wharton and Fowler, and they both wanted to have our two entities be more communicative and more involved together and be more...
They've both been elected since my meeting with them.
I have not been able to meet with them. It's been on my list of to-dos, and in full disclosure, they are dear friends of mine from law school, but with our busy schedules, we've not been able to hook up. There have been several meetings, and then someone has a trial or someone has a mediation that goes late, and it just hasn't worked out. But I know via email, I've communicated with both of them, and they have both expressed a very deep interest in wanting to make sure that we become more involved together, and it's not just us in mayor's office and them kind of a satellite entity. It should be more collaborative.
Chris was just finishing up his term on this commission when I was coming on, so he's definitely well-informed on the topics.
Right, and that's when I spoke with him about joining this commission, that was something he mentioned he wished there was more of, was more involvement between the council and the mayor's office.
I guess thematically, it's try to increase our outreach to the city council and try to get the city council more involved in at least being aware of what we're doing.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't know what data we have available to us to understand better what issues the city's facing, but those should be things that we should be able to collaborate on with the city council around. I noticed in the last meeting we talked about planning 2018 and kind of goals for the commission, and what data do we have available to us so that we can understand what those issues are and prioritize them to make them more actionable.
Echo, so that they're hand in glove with where the council and the rest of the city is going. Good point.
I do know affordable housing is the big one.
Yeah.
That is with housing prices, where they're at.
And I've been having ongoing conversations, and my concern is I don't want to be duplicative. So.
Right.
To compliment, Commissioner Maines, please.
What data do we have? I don't know.
I think it's been all over.
Anything like that? Like how do we collect the data? What data do we have available?
And
I can take a look at that.
Yeah, and on that part, I can bring that.
Driven decisions versus, obviously, there are some topics that are more anecdotal to the city.
Right, I can bring the plan. We can bring kind of what the mayor has, so the mayor's affordable housing plan, and her four main areas of focus is affordable housing, infrastructure, transit, and the last one, why am I forgetting? Fatima, help me out. Transit. Infrastructure.
People experiencing homelessness.
Yeah, and that may be the fourth one. So we have data on all of those four topics, and I can bring them in. And I think if we're having that meeting, then I'll just bring in all of those things, say if Shauna is leading one of those.
Specifically of the mayor's agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And so
I'm just wondering if there's any other additional data that we have that's more broad to diversity inclusion issues that the city's facing.
Yeah, and even with our housing and neighborhood division, they house a lot of that data specifically for East West. What neighborhoods have a lot of HUD or CDBG grants money being thrown at them, and we can definitely bring members of those divisions to come, just like how Brad's here. So, just let me know as we organize when you want those, or if you want them, just you specifically, and I can share that information, or I can share it out to the group.
Prioritize.
Yeah.
Great. Super.
If you have that readily available, I'd be interested in seeing it. I don't know.
Send it to everyone. Yeah.
Okay. Can you send it in advance of the next meeting so we have a chance to review it before?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'll send it earlier.
Thank you. A couple weeks before, or at least a week before.
So is it more that you want to see what the demographics are from the city and then areas of need?
What I'm trying to get at is what issues the city is facing in regards to diversity and inclusion. I don't know whether it be, cyberbullying in schools, or whether it be
school to prison pipeline.
Yep.
The school to prison pipeline is one of the biggest things that them
do. Yep.
Yeah. And the school to prison pipeline is one of the biggest things that the mayor would love for this commission to be included on and discussing as well, if that's possible. Just because that's top of mind everywhere.
Yeah. And then I think just to add on to the earlier part of the conversation around the communication between the city council and this commission, do we have a protocol? And if we don't, it might be a good idea for us to establish one so that we're not guessing what they think that
what we would be communicating to them and vice versa.
For the city council? There isn't one that's written out in the current, so we'd be creating it.
All run by the... the municipal code, and it's a pretty broad municipal code.
Really broad.
It goes to commissions. It's very non-specific. My suspicion, it was drafted that way so that it can be very flexible as the commission members change over the years. So it's certainly something that we can create as our personal policy, but we'd have to send it through the council and the mayor for enactment.
Yeah. I kind of keen off the conversation, obviously our ability to make things more actionable is we're working together and ensuring that we're using the right data in order to prioritize the right things and however we can align that with the city council.
So affirming with the city council, we're going to deal with A, B, C, and D because we see that it fits, number one, with your priorities, and number two, because the data says that this is relevant and it's urgent.
Okay. Yeah, and then how do we have a better, more ongoing communication protocol as the issues are progressing or changing?
So the feedback loop is there with them. So it's not like we're off in our little world over here, and then they're wondering, why are you going in this direction? And we're like, we're trying to help you. They're like, that's not what we're focusing on. So
one proposal is because we're all kind of assigned to a district, obviously we communicate with our district representatives.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
What was
and
that,
our
Nicole?
Community councils too.
I didn't hear that, Nicole or Commissioner Salazar.
So we all communicate with our representatives of our councils.
Oh, yeah.
Council person. Yeah.
Our council members, yeah. I would communicate with Council Member Mendenhall on a regular basis, and who has three here? Whoever has three would.
I'm three.
You're three. You talk to Chris.
Yeah,
I talk
to Chris.
So hard.
But I do think we all also need to formalize it too, because especially as we have seen where you have commission members come and go, if there's not an expectation on the part of the council to know, okay, I know that at least three times a year or quarterly, my commission, you know, the HRC commission member is going to reach out to me, or they're going to, you know, make a point of going out to lunch with me and just saying, these are the things that we're working on. Are we moving in the right direction? Is there something else that you feel that we need to be focusing on? What can we help you? Help us help you. So maybe that is just kind of a process or a protocol issue that we all need to work on, is to just say we will find a way to communicate with our individual council person at least once a quarter, whether it's just an email saying we're doing these things, and this is the direction that we're going. We need feedback from you. And start there. But there may also be a space and a time for it to be more formalized where we do a report. Because we used to do a report, don't we?
That's the only requirement, is at least once a year that you send a report to the mayor and the council. But it doesn't have a reciprocity or anything that's formalized in the ordinance. So that's something you all can look at. And there's a couple of lawyers on this commission, isn't there?
So I looked into that. It's not reciprocal, no.
So
again, we'd have to change.
So you send it, but we don't know whether it hit home or not.
That was the interesting part to me as well.
So we can propose that kind of legislation.
A response there is a response from the council to the report.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good job. Go in the wrong direction. We like this. We don't like that.
Right. So we could definitely do that. We can propose that the ordinance be amended to include
a response from the council. I like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move in. I make a motion that we move in that direction.
What happens to the at-large members?
We can bring you in and loop you in.
CC you to all communications.
Yeah. Work.
You need to come with us. We will drag one of you with us to those meetings.
Every meeting.
Yes.
You're the backup in case one of us gets sick or
that's
stuck
true.
Somewhere.
Did I have to open my mouth?
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Thank you, Luna.
Yeah, the at-large people have to meet with the RDA.
There we go. You get to rotate there, or the police department, or public utilities. Great. I think we've talked about a number of these things already. So we talked a bit about the affordable housing. Did you want to add anything more to that, Commissioner Dubia?
Recognize that we have a new member of the public with us.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, yes. Thank you. Do you want to introduce yourself? Thank you.
Sure. I just want to turn on.
Yeah, there you go.
My name is Terry Gilfillan. I am the Utah chapter lead for Moms Demand Action.
Okay.
And I'm here to just let you know that we are hosting, along with several other organizations, an event on June 2nd for gun violence awareness. And it is going to be a concert in the park at Canyon Rim, West Pavilion, and Amphitheater. We are going to have several bands play. We're looking for people, musicians, who are interested in participating. But we're definitely looking for gun violence survivors who would be willing to share their story. Okay. And, you know, so we can honor those members and families.
Do we have a calendar of events thing, or who does that kind of stuff if we were trying to share this information broadly with the community?
They're doing that right now with the new website, I've been told.
Okay.
And then it will be up and running. It's supposed to be up and running right now. And I'm hoping as soon as possible. And we'll have that on our human rights page.
Okay.
So then we can add those ourselves as well. And if you want to send me
that's
things,
what I was gonna say.
Then I can just put them on our Facebook page for now.
That's what I want to see, is that so we can get that announcement cascaded outward.
Mm-hmm.
What is the Facebook? How do I send that to you?
Oh, I can give you my contact information.
Okay, yeah. That would be great.
Yeah, and then you just send that
to... Are you staying till the end of the meeting, or are you leaving now?
Actually, we are having a planning meeting for this event in about 25 minutes. So
I can run and grab my card for you.
Yeah, and then you can just share that information with her, and then we'll get that word out. Thank you for coming, and thanks,
Mara
Commissioner,
will
for
grab you my
out.
Card.
Oh, great. Thank
just
you
email
so
me the information, and I'll throw it up on the page.
Yeah, and I'll give you... I'll also give you our invitation to participate if any of you know survivors, people who might be interested in participating. We're looking for volunteers and just people to come and help, and we're going to be doing voter registration. We'll hopefully invite several legislators and candidates to come.
Mm-hmm.
So people can actually ask them questions.
Okay. Nice.
Like actually, to dovetail with that, what I think would be really great is if the organization had like a series of questions you should ask the candidates that are running for various seats, because they may not be able to come to this event, but I think every single voter, if this is something they feel strongly about, they should be asking those candidates, what is your position on this? How will you know, have you worked on these issues before?
Okay. We have a survey
perfect.
Have every candidate fill out if they are interested in getting our endorsement.
Right. But so, it's good if you share that with constituents, because if constituents are asking those questions, I may not necessarily fill out a questionnaire from an organization, but if I have a constituent that is asking me these questions when I'm on their doorstep, the questions on your doorstep, when the candidate knocks on your door, here's your question.
For that.
That'd be great. Wonderful. Good, good, good.
That's
glad to hear
suggestion.
That.
See, that's why we need more people.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for coming and for bringing that information to us.
Chris?
Okay. So affordable housing, did we cover that topic effectively, or do you want to add some more things?
No, I can give an update. Thank you to Moana for connecting me with, I've forgotten her name.
Lonnie, with
the mayor's office on what they've been working on to really understand the scope of the. We've had a phone conversation. Unfortunately, she's been ill, so it's not gone beyond that. She's wanted to put together a high-level bulleted point presentation for me, and I said, no, give me the good, bad, and ugly. I'm fine. I'm a researcher at heart. I don't mind wading through the information to be able to extract that. She just sent that this morning, however. But I told her, give me a few days to digest it, and then I'll schedule an appointment with her. I'm hoping to do so certainly by the end of next week to be able to sit with her face-to-face. And then I asked her as a precursor to that meeting to really... Yeah, when I sit down, one of the questions I will be asking is, and here comes something familiar again, help me understand how is as a commission member, I can help, or the commission itself can help, and what actionable items we can do to help with the situation.
I realized I skipped over CEDAW report, which is like one of my most favorite things. So, Moana, what's happening with CEDAW?
So I'm just updating it and hoping somebody will want to take it on. Jason's smiling. We met with Victoria yesterday, Jennifer Seelig and I, and they were going to...
With the UN Women's Group?
Yes, okay. Victoria is from, the Utah's chapter. And she was willing to work with us as well to continue the work forward. We discussed ways in which, if it's not necessarily the CEDAW that we're passing here, but making sure that we are being inclusive of women and having these equity issues addressed in policy level things, to reevaluate it. So she's going to bring back information for us to look at how other cities have done CEDAW and what their success rate was, or and then bring it back to the group, because we also had the women's report that you were part of, Representative. And I'm wondering if whoever wants to take it on in this commission wants to look at both of those merging together in some kind of way. I don't know if
I can. Yeah. When we decided to take on CEDAW as our primary topic about a year and a half ago, we looked into it initially as it got adopted as a resolution and passed through the City Council. The Commission decided that our primary goal was going to be to come up with some actionable item that could recommend why CEDAW should be adopted as an ordinance. And that was what our goal was to put together a justification for adopting CEDAW as an ordinance. But now, since I'm the only one on the commission left who voted for that, we might want to get another briefing, revisit it, and decide, is that what we want to be the primary goal of this commission? Or is there a way that we could take CEDAW and apply it in
it to the rest of this stuff?
Or if it's something, yeah. I mean, we had a dovetail with the idea of a gender equity tool coming through with the HR reports on diversity requirements, and to be able to use the CEDAW as we can see these gaps exist here, and here. If we adopt CEDAW as an ordinance and a guiding policy for the Human Rights Commission recommending that CEDAW be adopted as an ordinance for Salt Lake City to follow, that's kind of where it got left. I think we had about 90% of the work done, and we just kind of needed to take it across the finish line, and it just never got there.
So maybe it's just dusting it off and seeing where it is and then taking it across the finish line.
I'm kind of curious to see what Victoria has to say about its success in other cities before we decide on resolution versus ordinance. And my knee-jerk reaction is ordinance, because resolutions, they're resolutions.
Well, that was always the working group that put the research together in the report, and we did all of the focus groups with women throughout the community.
It was a really good report.
That was our goal.
Yeah,
our goal was to make it an ordinance, but we were running into a lot of challenges with that. So it's like, okay, well, let's start with the resolution, and then, I think it's long overdue.
Yeah, let's see what Victoria has to say, and that will probably give us more justification to take that to the City Council and the Mayor's Office.
And see how it has worked or not worked in other communities.
Every city we spoke to says you have to find how it applies to your city. There is the convention that exists, and they say that you just use this as a template and you find a way to make it apply to the specifics of your city. And that's the advice we got over and over again from everybody that we spoke to.
Well, I think in revisiting the focus groups, the qualitative data from those focus groups, there were so many themes that were percolating that I'm sure are still relevant.
Right.
So the issues of safety, the issues of the school-to-prison pipeline, and communities of color in particular, but I'm sure our LGBTQ youth in their interaction with public safety and other city agencies, what their experience is our city agencies responsive. Those were the main themes. Health was also one.
but the education piece. But I do remember safety
and
it was big, really big, in terms of every single group that we talked to, whether it was an East Side group or a West Side group or an immigrant group or who it was. That was probably one of the main issues that just kept percolating to the surface.
And then I think that I remember reading it, and it was having lighting as one of the solutions. Yeah. And going back to what you all were saying was actionable items, then how are we providing that within our budget and saying in the infrastructure we want lighting, it provides X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And these, yeah, so I would love to go that direction as well, because then we can have actionable or requests.
As recommended by the CEDAW report of 2009.
Yeah, I'm leaning more towards ordinance, but I want to see more information.
Okay, that sounds good. So we would plan for a meeting where we could have Victoria give me
a good idea.
That. Super.
And so can I ask when is a reasonable date to try to invite her to?
I met with her yesterday, and she said she would gather it and bring back the information, so I can contact her maybe in two. Wait, what's my, what month is this? Is May, June? Maybe when we come back in August, would that be reasonable? I can invite her and she can have that information. So I can even write down what months you all want a person here. Okay.
And I'd just like to add, with my work with the UN, I've worked exclusively with CEDAW issues within the UN system.
Oh, perfect.
Mm. Pretty good.
Yeah, so she's going to probably be in charge of the working group.
Yeah. Again, you had to say something. I walked right in. That's perfect.
Wonderful. Yay. Okay. Police use of force, Jason.
So I had gotten back in October, basically, when the police use of force report got made public, initial buy-in, I would say, approval, vague approval from both Chief Brown and the mayor to make the police use of force report something that gets regularly updated. They thought it was a good idea, something that we should move forward with. Since then, I have not been able to get a meeting to codify that. It's just been something where I think that it's been too vague. So after this weekend, early next week, I'm just going to write everything up. I think that it's something that should be really easy to do, because it's just update the regularly update what we've already done. So
were you able to connect with Jen when I
we got connected, but you were going to explain to Jen after last meeting, that it's more of a way for the Salt Lake PD and the mayor's office to be able to point to something and say, look, this is what we are doing when asked.
And she was supportive of that.
Yeah,
I think that the part was I was also pushing to see if she could meet with everyone, so it was you presenting the idea.
I think I'm just going to write everything up of my idea of what this is for, share it with Jen, have the work up through the mayor's office chain of command, and then hopefully Chief Brown will be more receptive to the idea, because it's not about it's about transparency and accountability, but it's also a way for the police department to be able to turn around and say that, well, you can go look at our use of force report. We keep track of this every year or biannually, and we have in it goals. This is how we've met the goals, how we've not met the goals. It's really a way to show that the police department's being proactive on these topics and transparency. So all those things that we are 100% behind. So it's just one of those things, I think, where this is falling through the cracks because there's other priorities. So I'm going to regroup next week. I'm going to attempt to just lay everything out in an outline, and then everybody can read it, and then maybe it'll be a lot easier to get that meeting to finally happen. So, sorry, no progress yet.
All righty. Any questions or feedback for Jason, Commissioner Wessel? Okay.
Ella, since there's so many new members, let me briefly just say the commission worked from before I was on it up through last October on getting a police use of force report. It began under Mayor Becker's administration and continued through Mayor Biscupsi's administration. And it's now publicly available online. You can go and look at it. There were several hundred work hours put into it. Had, I think, more than 50 people worked on it. And the idea is that rather than having to come back and redo this again in 5 to 10 years, let's just keep it updated every year. And as part of an appendix or an addendum to it, have, okay, this is what we're looking at. Our goals for the next 2 years is going to be, you know, to achieve this. And then they come back in 2 years or a year and they say, did we meet that goal? What are our next goals? Here's the data. So basically straightforward, just keep the document alive so that you don't have to start from scratch again and put in hundreds of work hours to achieve the same thing.
And I believe that some of the recommendations that were made there were the de-escalation, and they implemented that. CAG having an activist group as well. So they're almost all of...
Mental health training.
Yeah. Those were all recommendations that came out of that that they're currently doing. So you can also bring that information. Shauna, you were interested in that. And that came out of the use of force. If you haven't had a chance to read it, I can attach that with our next. You're going to have a big file to do read in the next week or so. I can collect all these things and put them in an email and send them out. If you're interested in reading,
Moana, which would be helpful for, I know for me, is if you send those to us and then maybe just do a one-page executive summary sheet that says, this is this report, and there's these three main points. Do you mind doing that? I mean, requires an extra step, but I just think it's easier for me to synthesize what I've got in front of me. If there's a lot of links and attachments, if you can just kind of give us a reminder.
An executive summary
of just like...
I can do that.
And it could just like be a paragraph on each one or a few bullet points on each one.
Mm-hmm.
The main findings. So like what we just discovered from the use of force one, these are the main things that came of it.
Yeah, or even like CEDAW.
The CAG, all of these things. And you'll find those in the document. And then we can dig into it so we know a little bit more about it. But then it's helpful, I know for me, just because I get so much information flying at me to remind me, okay, this is what this is. And this is why we asked for it. So thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. And then the diversity recruitment, that was kind of the discussion we had earlier. Do you feel like we covered that adequately,
yes.
Commissioner? Thank you. And then Commissioner Salazar.
Yes. So Operation Rio Grande, I have let go by the wayside, and that is my fault. I got into HB 248, and so I'll have to really follow up with David Litvak on that, on what's going on there. I've been keeping track of some of it in the news, and I'll talk with Mr. Litvak more about that. With HB 248, and for some of you who may or may not know, the legislature recently passed a law this last legislative session amending sentencing for infractions, misdemeanors, making compensatory service available and favored in many cases over huge fines. What we have been finding in the legal community, particularly in the criminal defense world, and I'm not a criminal defender anymore, I was for a minute, but I did see this when I was a public defender, is that fines were being thrown on these people with very limited means, and they had no way of paying it, and it was becoming, our jails were starting to become a bit of a debtor's prison because they were not able to pay their fines off, and so in order to show cause would be filed, and then they'd be tossed in jail as part of a sanction for not paying those fines. So this law was excellent. Brian King, Representative Brian King, really took the effort on this one and got it pushed through. And one of the issues that I know that the mayor has identified and that several other people in the legal community have identified is our justice courts and how they are doing the same thing. It's becoming sort of that same sort of situation where people of very limited means are being fined and getting repeat fines, and then they're getting penalties on top of those fines and interest on top of those fines. What we discussed at the last meeting was how do we enact this on the city level. In looking through the Salt Lake City ordinance, and it took several hours to skim through all of it, it was riveting reading that I
thank you for doing that.
Which is also how I discovered that there's really no our ordinance is pretty loose. I have been doing my research, and Sterling, oh boy, that's fantastic. But I read through it all, and what I discovered after my hours and hours of research is what our justice courts do is they follow what the AOC, the Administrative Office of the Courts, does. And there's a whole policy about that. And they follow really what the state statute says. So the idea is, and I've already emailed the AOC about this. I have a couple friends in the AOC. Is there a way that Salt Lake City can enact a specific policy for our justice courts that favors specifically the use of compensatory service over fines? The language in the statute is that they may use compensatory service, not shall.
Okay.
So it's still very discretionary, and the concern that I have is that we do have a new judge coming on board in the justice courts, and he's a bit more progressive. And there are a couple who are on the bench in the justice courts who are fairly progressive, specifically Baxter. He's very much about compensatory service and being mindful of people experiencing homelessness and people of limited means. But I'm wondering, and I need to talk to the AOC about this, is there a way to either amend the AOC's policy so that it's more favored here with the new compensatory statute, or if we can enact our own policy, or if that's going to be a conflict with what the AOC does. I don't know the answer to that. I've already emailed J.C. Skinner,
who's with the court system
right
now.
Okay. I remember she was at
and she used to be the governor's office. That's great.
Right.
Okay.
So I thought that was my first step is talking to her about it, and I have not yet heard back from her, and I don't doubt it. I know been incredibly busy lately.
Well, we could just keep a lot of these as kind of standing agenda items that as things percolate and as you get updates, then we'll just hit it. And if you don't have an update, then that's fine. But then you can let us know when you get word as to what they recommend might be the least resistant pathway, the way I put it, to implement at a city level.
Right. That's kind of what I figured is a very clear policy that favors compensatory service over fines, or, you know, taking into account somebody's income, that maybe it's okay to charge the private firm lawyer a higher fee than, you know, single mom with three kids working minimum wage. So
thank you. Thank you for your work on that.
Scandinavian country has sliding scales based on income.
I think we should talk to Brian King about that next legislative session, implementing sliding scales. I know it would hurt me, but I'm okay with that. I think that's fine. If it means that you know, people who can't afford it can get a break, I'm okay with that.
And for a quick update on the homeless resource centers, where they're at, they are set for next week. I believe they're breaking ground for the DI site.
Okay.
And then the week, they're still figuring out the 300 West site, the High Avenue, because of where it's located. I guess there's a huge electrical pole that is connecting all of those businesses in that area that's right in the middle of that site that would have to be removed.
Yep.
So they're working with Rocky Mountain Power. But
sure about that.
Yeah,
about
that's
that.
what I know about breaking ground. And of course, in terms of the services, that is the county, and we can, David Levesque was happy to schedule a time so that he can come in and discuss. Yeah. So if we want to write down what date he, I'll see what his availability is, and then he can come and directly talk with us and give updates. But that's where we are in terms of building.
So next meeting, we're having the report on school to prison pipeline, right? Do we want to do the homeless update then, or do we want to do that later on in the year?
I'm fine.
What do people think?
Whatever the...
I think an update sooner than later is better.
That's what I'm thinking. Because things are moving.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Quick question. Our next meeting, first week of June, doesn't that coincide with Pride Week?
Yeah.
Yes, that will be Pride Week. Let me double check the... Pride starts on Friday, though.
Oh, okay. So
they'll be
in a way.
They'll be setting up and things, but Friday.
Yeah.
So. I just remember sometimes when there is something going on down here, getting into this building is virtually impossible.
Yeah, no, it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so we'll just miss that.
Okay. Our meeting will be June 5th.
Yeah, so it'll be right after it.
Right after then, okay.
They'll probably tear down everything and prepare for the next festival.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Coming festivals, fast. Yeah.
All the festivals are coming.
So do they? Do we still do Living Traditions?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
It'll be in 2 weeks, I believe.
It's like, yeah, it's usually mid-May. That's why I got to thinking about that.
It is the 18th through the 20th. That's Living Traditions.
And Commissioner Means, what that is, since you're new to the community, is there is a big celebration, mostly from our ethnic communities. It's a weekend, and it's food, it's arts, the different cultural arts, and then performances, and it's just a whole weekend. And then they usually bring in, is it the Salt Lake Arts? Salt Lake Arts Council that oversees it. That's why I wanted to bring that forward.
We should put that on our Facebook page also.
As a reminder, but it's a great fun event.
Yeah, really family friendly.
Very great. And they usually bring in a couple of acts from outside of the state to perform.
And I was just going to say they're sponsored by the mayor's ACE grant. The ACE grant is something communities can apply for. So the Pride Center gets it, and several other communities get it as well. Yeah, for their events.
I recommend for the June agenda that we appoint, elect, decide, whatever, a working group for the Human Rights Day.
Oh, yeah.
Because if we are taking July off, August would be too late to get that ball rolling. Okay.
Yep. And Moana,
Go ahead.
Moana and I already have the venue reserved for you guys.
Thank you.
So it's Sorensen on, I was going to say in the ending notes, reserve December, if all of you can save the date, will be December 8th. Saturday, December 8th is going to be Human Rights Day.
Well, we'll need to have somebody starting to take lead on that, I think, by next month.
Yeah.
Some of our new folks be thinking if that might be of interest.
And can I ask, along the lines of the, I know it's traditional to not meet during the month of July, however that means this commission will meet 11 times a year instead of 12. Mm-hmm. I'd like to propose that if the commissioners do not have a conflict for that particular month, that we continue to meet if we still would have enough to have a quorum. Just to keep some momentum going, because we do have quite a few things.
Yeah, I think we've got a lot on our plate.
Even without a quorum, we can meet. We just can't pass anything substantive.
Right.
So we could meet even without a quorum. It's
where does that fall in?
July 3rd. Right below July 4th. Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at it. We're strangely in town on July 3rd.
I will be in town.
My kids aren't going to be in school or summer camp that day.
Okay. Is that a problem for anybody else?
Bring them here.
Yeah. Hey, we're very inclusive.
I'll be out of town that
way. Okay. Yeah. Anybody? You'll be here?
I don't think so.
You won't be here.
But I'm public.
Okay.
Hopefully not. Working on it, Luna.
But there's four. Are you good with that? Well, so let's go ahead and move forward with it. I just hate to, again, lose momentum. Yeah. That would be my recommendation anyway. So, okay. All right. Super. Okay. I just realized we kept Brad here the whole time, and really, we could have excused you. I apologize.
Actually, it's very interesting to me.
Okay, good. You're welcome to stay as long as you'd like, but then it occurred to me that we never officially excused you.
I always tell my staff, everything you do touches some part of the government. Yeah. So it's good to learn.
That's great. Super. Alrighty. Well, if there's no other business to come before the commission, I'll put that out there if anybody wants to bring up. Are there any issues, Moana?
I said save the date. CODA, you asked if we could have an annual meeting. They were so excited. to meet with you all. Yeah, so they said we can just figure out a date and we can meet with them and a time, maybe at the time they meet or we meet. So I talked with Miss Emma Houston, and then she put me in contact with Wendy, I forget her name, and she's the chair of their commission. So they are excited to meet, and then I guess even having that discussion with the county and seeing what they're doing would be valuable. So
I'm thinking that would be a good fall, maybe a good fall event, maybe to get us together. Just for, by way of background, that's the county's diversity commission. So we got to thinking,
we should be
at least once a year, meet with them and just see what they're up to. We share what we're doing and then find ways to coordinate with efforts.
And I just was participating in part of one of their events, which was a panel on race and the status of race in Salt Lake County. So it was a great discussion. And if there are things like that, we were talking a lot about being proactive in terms of codifying things or making recommendations. But a lot of what their commission does too is they hold events that directly impact the community at that time. So it's pretty much open what the commission does. And I think in the future, I want to hold one of those too, and then have these living room conversations. And if we work together with the commission, then it can be something in terms of a partnership. Yeah. So I'll let you know on what's happening there. There was a lot of people that came to it. Fatima, you think about like what, 80 people were in the room.
Wow.
And there was a lot of news coverage as well. We got to discussing race in a way that maybe some of them haven't entered into the conversation. And there are so many issues like LGBTQ issues with youth, which the Pride Center has come to us and we've discussed ways on how to be better in creating policy or supporting in other ways. So I'm wondering if those types of issues we can address in these living room conversations, right? So we are changing policy, but would love to include all of you on the day-to-day things that are happening out in the community. So, yep, that's all I have.
Awesome.
Gosh, that light just
feels
like it's me right
there. Oh, the sun. That was like
right there.
The chair for the meeting gets all the sun.
Yeah. It's like, oh.
Yeah, it's a total irritant and maybe a good reason to entertain a motion to adjourn.
Unless anybody had any.
I was going to say, any other
vague human rights related issues that anybody wanted to talk about? I think that's sort of
so
open
vague.
Dialogue.
That's a vague or specific.
Anybody?
I was going to move to adjourn.
Okay, no, does anybody have anything?
Two topics have concerned me over the last month. My background being in Middle East studies, Middle East politics. There's been the Israeli Defense Force has been using live ammunition against Palestinian protesters in Gaza across the border, using snipers to shoot unarmed protesters. Some people have been shot while running away. Others have been shot while praying. Journalists have been shot. The number of people shot is in the thousands, and the number of deaths are in the dozens. So it's very clearly human rights violations. The UN has kind of milquetoast condemned it, but it's kind of a sorry state of affairs when we have a military shooting unarmed protesters and there being very little international condemnation of it. More specific topic, moving on, there's an Egyptian physics teacher on the East Coast who has just been declared deportable by ICE. He was convicted in absentia in Egypt and given a death penalty for being protesting against the military coup. So if he gets deported back to Egypt, he will be executed. And we accepted him in here under refugee status. For whatever reason, the internal workings of ICE has now declared that he is deportable, knowing that he will be going back with already convicted. So I think that I don't know what's happened to our national policies that we would even consider sending somebody back to a death sentence, but those are two topics that have really bothered me over the last couple of weeks.
Have we in the past as a commission taken positions on things like that, where it's like, you know, the commission condemns XYZ?
We've sent a letter of condolence to a sort of equivalent organization after the Pulse nightclub shootings. A lot of times I think that when a topic like that comes up, it's more of we would recommend the mayor take a stand on an issue. But I know that before my time here, there was quite a bit of letter writing that took place.
Something to consider. I mean, I don't need to do it right now, but just something to consider how we might want to have a protocol or a process so that we know what we fall back on when something like this occurs, or if we want to issue a letter of condemnation or support or whatever that might look like. All right.
I had one last comment.
Yes.
So there's been a couple of talks. I think the campaign was called Stand Against Racism. Mm-hmm. I did attend one at the YWCA, and I think the one that you guys attended was also on the same thing. And then in technology-related fields, women leadership, there are a lot of women panels or panels happening. And I just want to put it out there that the situation or where we are, talking about racism, talking about everything, and not having representation from the Muslims in the current climate does not justify a lot of things. So I think we all are in positions where we are invited on panels. We can ask to have full representation from anybody that we think needs to be represented. I think we need to take it up on our own selves. If there's no diversity on the panel, please ask for it. If there's no representation of minorities, please ask for it. Because unless we all put our force behind it, we're not representing, we're not doing what we need to do as a conscientious citizen.
Just that. Thank you. Very good point. There was somebody had mentioned, I saw a posting, there's a Latinx Facebook that I'm on. Oh, yeah, I think you may have noticed it, about a panel recently where there were, was
all
no
men.
All men and no minority representation. And,
We can make a log. I can give you one okay. every month at least.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm sure I'll run into that situation.
And I think we all have resources that we can share. If you're on a panel and you do need representation from my community, it doesn't have to be me.
Right.
We know of 10 people behind us. So everybody should be a resource for their own community.
And I think that would be helpful. And along those lines, I'd suggest, you know, it would be really helpful because we don't always know the communities to which each of the commissioners belong or are part of. And I think that could be helpful, that we have something compiled that we understand, that so we understand who and where our resources are.
And as we're making the new website, I would love to have a collection of all your bios. And then we'll
I gave you mine already, right?
Did I? I can't remember. Maybe assignment for everyone that hasn't made, if you haven't sent your biography.
Your headshot
and
no, you
bio.
Just have that in your hat.
I actually do. It's in PDF format. I can just pop it in
too.
Just do it to make sure.
Yeah.
Just send more than that.
Just send that, and then I can have it, and then we can throw it, up there on our. And even for our own commissioner's page, too, I think it's great to have our bios in there so people know who we are.
Definitely. Super. Great. Thank you. So I heard Commissioner Salazar Hall make a motion to adjourn.
Second
by Commissioner Wessel. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? We are adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
I think